Whew. It's crazy out there.
Oh, it is. We barely made it.
Hope everybody stay inside, or if you're driving, just, you know, stay in your car. It's pretty nutty out there. There's a storm going over our heads right now as I'm talking at this moment, and the lightning is pretty fierce. I honestly think that Huddy and I came within about 100 feet of a lightning strike on the way here. It's about as close to lightning as I ever want to get.
It's as close as I've ever been. It's terrifying.
You know, when you see the flash and hear the boom at the same time.
I don't recommend it.
And you feel it all together. And yeah. It was crazy. Well, I hope everybody else is okay as this thing rides over our heads. And we're going to try to help pass that time with you by bringing you another hour of American Hit Radio, which is what we do here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6 p.m. On Fridays, we change our theme a little bit. You probably know this by now. If you're a regular listener, I would think you have to know it by now. We call our show How Music Changed, where we look at some specific events and or artists from the full history of recorded music. And we pick what we consider to be the 250 most influential artists ever. Hear that? There it is. There's thunder in the background. It's amazing. Wow. Sounds like we're in an echo chamber. Anyway, we pick 250 of the most important artists or events that have happened, and we cover them in depth. And for the past few weeks, we have been looking at the girl groups of the early 1960s, well, late 50s into 1960s. This is show number 8 that we are about to begin. And with this show, we are going to cover what I would, I guess, would pretty much the very peak of the genre. We are right in the heart of when the girl group phenomenon was at its absolute peak, which is to say mid to late 1963. By the time this show ends, you see the writing on the wall, because as this show ends...
The writing look like B-E-A-T?
L-E-S. It sure did. Exactly right. The writing was some sort of British handwriting, I think, that changed everything. But let's get to it. We're going to start with the person who's going to be actually the star of this show, more or less, because she's going to be featured 3 times in this program, had 3 huge hits in 1963, which definitely made her one of the top artists of that year. She was a junior at the Dwight School for Girls in Englewood, New Jersey, when this record was released and became a number one hit. What do you tell your girlfriends in high school when you have a number one hit on the pop charts? Well, that was the problem for Leslie Gore when she hit with this song called It's My Party. I've got to figure what I just did. Did I give you the wrong disc, maybe? Because that doesn't make any sense. Or I'll try these, because I think I might have given you the wrong ones. It's very possible. Sorry about that, folks. What it is, you know, what I do for these shows is I actually burn CDs with the tracks that I want to use, and sometimes I might have got the numbers crossed, which is very possible.
They do look very similar.
They look identical. You know, and I also wrote the show number on them, but I might have actually got them crossed. Which we'll find out right now.
Well, you're going to find out real soon.
I know Diana Ross did not go to Englewood High School for girls.
Just for Dwight the record. You're going to put that out there for the record?
Just, we'll see. So let's try this again and see if we hit on Leslie Gore this time. Sorry about that.
Supposed to be mine.
just walk through the door like a queen with her king. Oh, what a birthday surprise. Judy's wearing his ring. It's my party and I'll cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. You would cry too if it happened to you.
All right, that's Leslie Gore, of course. It's My Party, and I'll Cry If I Want To, with the travails of Judy and Johnny.
Aww.
Making her feeling nasty on her birthday. How horrible is that? But it's obviously so perfect for the girl group thing. It's exactly what the girl group trend was about, really.
Right.
Was who was dating who and how and who was cheating and who was cute and who, you know.
Right.
All that stuff. So obviously Leslie Gore was, you know, pretty much hit the nail on the head with that one as far as what the purpose of the whole thing was about. What's really funny about it, though, is that the song kind of found life later on. There was the lead singer of Roxy Music, Brian Ferry, actually does a version of that song, which is rather funny, pretty hysterical to hear a grown man doing that song.
Especially quite silly.
It's silly and funny at the same time. It's from his first solo album. Anyway, moving on. The next act we're going to cover, actually, they're very peripheral as far as being part of the girl group sound. I'm including them simply because it's a female lead vocalist. The fact is that it's essentially a band that's made up out of Marines. Three male Marines named Walter Vickers, Rodney Taylor, and who else was it? There was another member. Oh, Billy Hill and Rudolph Johnson. Sorry, four male members. They eventually recruited a female, though, who was also a Marine, named Anita Humes, made her the lead singer. Why? Because it was 1963. You had a much better chance of having a hit. If you put a woman in charge of your band, to let her, at least featured a woman in front of your band, because it worked well. And that's exactly what happened in this case, as this song became another million seller for the group called The Essex. The song is called Easier Said Than Done.
My friends all tell me, go to him, run to him, say sweet lovely things to him and tell him. He's the one. Deep in my heart, I know it, but it's so hard to show it, cause it's easier said than done. My buddies tell me, fly to him, sigh to him, tell him I would die for him, and tell him he's the one. Although he gives me a feeling that sets my heart a reeling, yet it's easier said than done. For him, tell him he's the
back-to-back hits from the summer of 1963. That, of course, was The Chiffons, One Fine Day. It was their follow-up to their previous single, which was a number one hit for 4 weeks. That was He's So Fine. That was the song that literally put them on the charts, One Fine Day, keeping them there, where they would be back again. We'll hear them again in a short while, whether later in this show or the next show, depending. I think it's going to be the next show, actually, as things fall. Before that, we heard the Essex. I had mentioned a band of Marines, actually, came out of Camp Lejeune. I think that's in North Carolina, isn't it? Camp Lejeune?
I'm going to agree with you, but I'm not sure.
I'm not 100% sure either. I think it is, though. Anyway, that was a number one song for 2 weeks in 1963. Looking at girl groups, and since we're covering them in something that resembles a chronological, I mean, a lot of these songs are overlapping now, but we're more or less chronological in terms of like the general time period that these songs are appearing in, which is to say the summer and the late fall of 1963. This is what you'd be hearing on the radio on a very regular basis. Our next artist was known by her fans as Mama Soul, which is pretty cool that she actually even had a nickname or had fans, because she's essentially a one-hit wonder. And yet, as a one-hit wonder, she has one of the most incredible resumes of anybody I had ever, of any one-hit wonder I've ever seen. Her name is Doris Troy. Her artist name is Doris Troy. You still don't know who I'm talking about, probably, right?
Not at all.
Incredible. Her real name was Doris Higginson. She's from the Bronx. She was the daughter of a Pentecostal minister. Her parents actually despised popular music, refused to let her sing it, so she had to sing in the church choir, did that, but she also had to work for a living, because that was part of what her parents were trying to do to discipline her. It was only right. So she got a job as an usherette at the Apollo Theater, and what happens? She's discovered by James Brown.
Nice.
I don't think her parents would have been too happy about this.
No.
But anyway, so now she's, you know, she's in the thick of it with somebody of the caliber of James Brown, and she starts getting work, and she sings as a background singer, get this, with the following people: Solomon Burke.
Nice.
The Drifters, Sissy Houston, Dionne Warwick. She records with all of these people before she even puts out a single.
Holy
she
mackerel.
Finally puts out the track that I'm about to play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And after this song comes out, it ends up being covered by The Hollies, Linda Ronstadt, again, Brian Ferry, Ann Murray, Harry Nilsson. All these people cover this song, her only hit. And yet it's the only time she gets on the pop charts. So after this song fades, and she really has nothing else that she can claim as a hit in the United States, she goes on as a backup singer throughout the 60s and the early 70s. She sings backup for groups like the Rolling Stones, the Humble Pie. She's singing background vocals on The Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd.
Wow.
She sings with
around.
Right. She sings with George Harrison, Dusty Springfield, Nick Drake, Carly Simon. She's on the records by all of these people. She's eventually even signed by the Beatles. She's signed by the Beatles to the Apple Records label in 1969.
Amazing.
On a failed continuance of her solo career. But, I mean, all of this from a woman who had one hit single that reached number 10 in the year 1963. Here is that single. It's called Just One Look.
Just one look, and I felt so hard. Oh, I need love with you. Oh, oh, I found out. just one look. That's all it took. Just one look. That's all it took.
Isn't that incredible? Like, what a story,
amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and most people, when you hear this song, you don't even hear that version anymore, unfortunately. You don't hear her original version. I think it's Linda Ronstadt's version that gets the lion's share of airplay. And I would say second place might go to the Hollies for their cover of it, which is, again, this is the way that it went down, because after the British invasion, which is to say after the Beatles hit the American shores, all these English bands were looking for American R&B tracks to cover. So, you know, and the Beatles were covering girl group tunes. So sure. The Hollies, of course, had, why wouldn't they do the same? And they had a hit with their version of her song. So there you have it. But it's amazing to think that Doris Troy was singing with people like the Rolling Stones and...
that's quite the list.
Dark Side of the Moon, you know. And especially, as our engineer Earl's pointing out, I mean, Nick Drake, that's a reach. It's amazing. Incredible. All right, then. We started our show with Leslie Gore. We're going to return with Leslie right now, because after It's My Party was such a huge hit, it was time for a follow-up. She needed a single, of course, and that song was so huge. What are you going to do? Well, as a lot of people were doing back then, they would do answer songs. Well, Leslie decided to do her own answer song. And it's really funny, because I got an email from a listener. I think it was Rich. His name was Rich. A regular listener sends me emails every now and then talking about the show, and he mentioned to me that I forgot to play this song, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, contraire, I didn't forget, I just didn't get to it yet, you know. But his point
saving
was
saving it up
that with Leslie Gore's song, it's My Party. Not only that sets her up as being a bratty little girl, but
right.
This song sets her up as being pretty much flat out evil and nasty. Because now what ends up happening is this is her revenge song on Judy. Because of Johnny. As you remember, Judy was the girl that stole
her
guy.
Now she's going to steal him back.
Right. So now she's... And the way she goes about it is by pretending to like another guy. So Johnny gets all worked up and punches out this poor innocent guy who was probably just doing the right thing. He likes her. He thinks she's being nice. Nah, she's just using him to get Johnny to start a fight with him, to basically beat him up so that she can say, "Oh, he beat him up for me. He must like me."
It's amazing. The way of thinking.
It's incredible. And this song ended up being a top five hit in 1963 for Leslie Gore, establishing once again that tradition of what the girl group songs were really about. They were really nasty people.
Yeah.
Here's that song called Judy's Turn to Cry.
Down and cried my eyes out. Now that was a foolish
All I can tell you is I wouldn't want to go near that girl with the 10-foot pole.
Revenge is sweet.
Really, she's getting people. she's the type of girl that would hire somebody to knock you off.
That's right.
You know, just to get her away. Out of control, man. You got to watch these girl group, you know, things. In fact,
types,
yeah. We're on a theme here now because this is like, you can just see where this is going here now. Around late 1963, there was another group called the Angels that had a song that was sort of a twist on the exact same theme. This time, it's a guy who's spreading stories about a girl who is, because her boyfriend left her, so he's telling everybody that all these things that are probably sexual in nature, it's implied, it's not stated outright, but it's obviously he's doing stuff to, like, mess with her reputation.
Uh-oh.
And she knows how she's going to get things straightened out, because according to this song, as the angels sing it, everything returns to normal, and this person's going to get beat on now because my boyfriend's back.
And you're going to be in trouble.
He went away, and you hung around, and bothered me every night. And when I wouldn't go out with you, you said things that weren't very nice. My boyfriend's back, and you're going to be in trouble.
Hey, la, hey, la, my boyfriend's back.
When you see him coming, better cut out on the double.
Hey, la, hey, la, my boyfriend's back.
You've been spreading lies that I was untrue.
Maybe you're right, Heidi, that maybe the guy did deserve it.
He totally deserved it.
That's the Angels. That's a group from New Jersey. And they were actually kind of lucky that that song got released because they were one of these groups that mostly were doing backup work, backup vocals, and a lot of commercials. The personnel was changing. I mean, I was reading their history, and it would take me 20 minutes to run through it.
A lot of groups made records back then. You're in the studio. They got a song. They need someone to sing it.
Yeah, bring them in, but that's just it. They were really hardly that much of a consistent group because the personnel was changing so much. You know, there was so many different people that came and went.
A lot of rotation.
And even name changes eventually until they settled on the Angels. And even when they recorded this song, it was originally intended to be a demo for the Shirelles because the Shirelles were long overdue for a hit. In 1963. I mean, they kicked off the whole girl group thing with Will You Love Me Tomorrow, had a couple of great other hits, but by 1963, they had like one hit, number four, they had a song called Foolish Little Girl, but that was their last entry into the top 10, and they were looking for something to get them on. But luckily, they apparently thought the version by the Angels was good enough to be released, and it went to number one for them for 3 weeks, in fact, in 1963. So there you have it. Looking at girl groups, this is probably as good a time as any to mention that you are listening to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio, the show on Fridays. We call it How Music Changed, where we cover music history, et cetera, et cetera. If you are interested in the program, you want to hear what we do, perhaps some of our other shows that you might have missed, and you want to catch up. If you got, you know, it's a rainy night. Maybe you want to sit in and, you know, learn a little something.
And not get wet.
Do a little bit of, learn yourself something or other, right. Check out the internet. All you got to do is search for American Hit Radio on any search engine, and you'll find our site. Comes right up, and this show will be available right there on the homepage, and the previous shows as well. So check it out if you want. Just search for American Hit Radio. Anyway, let's go on from there. This next song is by a group called the J-Nets. I have to say, this is probably my favorite girl group song of all time, and it's almost impossible for me to explain why, because it is one of the weirdest songs I think I've ever heard. I try to make sense of this lyrically. I don't know what it's about. Sometimes I think, what are they talking about? Okay, it sounds like it could be a jump rope song, or are they talking about death? It really sounds like it could be heavy. I just can't figure it out for the life of me.
I'll explain it to you afterwards.
Listen, this is a bunch of girls from the Bronx singing a song that is one of the most mysterious and mystifying of all the girl group songs I have ever heard, which is probably why I love it so much. They call themselves the J-Nets, and the song is Sally Go Round the Roses. There we have it. That is one of the most interesting and bizarre songs from the entire girl group era, I think. They call themselves the J-Nets. Sally Go Round the Roses? What?
I don't know. Maybe it has to do with Ring Around the Rosie.
That's what I mean. It brings on those feelings of like the plague. It's a song about the plague or something. Or maybe just a kid's song that became, you know,
right,
just some innocent...
An adaptation of it.
Didn't necessarily mean anything when they were writing it, but it's got that weird minor key intonation which makes it spooky. Plus the fact that there must I didn't know this either until I really started listening to it. I'm saying, how many girls are in this group? You know, you listen to that record, there's something like 20 different female voices on that record.
Really?
Yeah, it's out of control. The guy who was producing the record had, like, first of all, the group had something like 6 members. Then they put an ad in a newspaper and they recruit even more girls to come into the studio to sing it.
We've
then the guy who's producing it,
girls.
He's not happy with it. So then he starts bringing in these, like, these professionals to come in and put their vocals on top of the track. So according to, I think it was like one of the, somebody by the name of Johnny Louise Richardson, who was the daughter of one of the producers. She said that anybody that came in the studio that week, the producer would just put them on the track.
Wow.
Something like close to 20 voices, as they said. And they only got one song out of it, but it's that really beautiful, strange, mysterious song, Sally Go Round the Roses. All right, then. Now, the next thing I'm going to play, I don't need to say much about it. If you are a regular listener of this program, How Music Changed, that is, you'll know that before we were covering girl groups, as we are now, we did a huge, incredibly long series dedicated to the music of Motown. We did 69 shows where we played every single Motown hit single. Now, that being said, because we did that, I don't want to be too redundant. And if I were to play all of the girl group tracks that we played in Motown series for this series, I'll never get done with that. So I'm going to skip a great number of the Motown hits, but there's a few that you just can't skip in terms of like their impact and how important they were in the middle of the girl group sound. And this is one of those, of course, by Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. The song is called Heat Wave. Bigger hits from the Motown side of things.
Doesn't get old, though, to hear that. It's still great.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, most of that Motown stuff still sounds absolutely great. Some of the girl group songs are a little bit dated, even by my standard. I love old music. So, you know, but even most of the stuff is just fine. I hear it now, and I love to hear it because a sense of nostalgia, and a good song is always a good song.
Exactly.
But when it comes to Martha Reeves, there's no doubt about it with a song like Heat Wave.
Right.
I don't know about this next song. I don't know if I would say the same thing here. This is actually, it's a group called The Raindrops, which really what it is it's
appropriate for today.
Yes, absolutely. Sure is. And This is really, it's a one of these studio groups, Heidi, that don't really exist. It's actually Ellie Greenwich and Jeff Barry.
Okay.
The two songwriters from the Brill Building, mm-hmm. And they form a pretend group. They call themselves the Raindrops. They released a couple of their own compositions as under that name, and this was the biggest hit that they had under that title, a song that came out in late summer of 1963 called The Kind of Boy You Can't Forget. That's actually a pretty fun song, isn't it? It's a fun song. Silly, but it's fun. The Kind of Boy You Can't Forget. That's actually, like I said, Jeff Barry and Ellie Greenwich under a the moniker known as the Raindrops.
A nom de plume.
Exactly. Oh, you know, I should also mention, I just got a call from a listener, a really nice woman, calling up to basically chastise me because I'm a little bit of a literalist sometimes with my pronunciations. And I had totally... If I ever did know, I obviously forgot. But the singer who I had mentioned last week, I think I had said out loud Shelley Fabares, which is kind of silly. Shelley Fabare is what I should have said. And she's 100% right, and I want to thank her for setting the record straight.
That's right.
I'll never
keeping
do that again.
Straight.
Exactly. So thank you very much. It's cool to have listeners who actually, A, enjoy the show, and B, are kind enough to call up and talk to me about stuff like that. That's good. It's always good. So
that's
I appreciate
right.
it very much, and I want to thank that nice woman very much for letting me know that. Where are we then? Oh, okay. Another bit of a sleeper tune, the girl group from the girl group Days. Again, this is probably more like late fall, maybe getting into the winter of 1963, which is it's getting cold for the girl groups pretty soon. But this is a group out of Los Angeles, so they're pretty warm. And this is a song, actually. You know what's the weird thing about this song that I can tell you is that it's written by David Gates. Does that name mean anything to you?
Is he related to Bill Gates?
No. David Gates is the front man for the group Bread.
Oh.
So there you have it. He actually wrote this song. It's called Popsicles and Icicles.
Popsicles, icicles, baseball and fancy clothes. These are a few of the things he loves. He loves meat pies and brown eyes and wind blowing through his hair. These are a part of the boy I love. If you put them all together, much to your surprise, you'll find a bit
guitars and drive-ins on Friday night. These are a few of the things we love. Maybe silly, but still he is just what I dreamed about. Yes, he's the boy.
Leslie Gore, back with yet another piece of drama. You don't own me. I guess it's slightly feminist this time. I guess that things weren't working out.
She finally got a wake-up call after she got wronged by her boyfriend so many times.
She gets Johnny back and she's like, wait a minute. You know what's amazing? All these tracks, we had another regular listener who calls us up all the time. From I think it's from Hollis, Queens, a really nice guy. And he called to ask me if those tracks were produced by Quincy Jones. Now, there's a smart listener, man, because he's 100% right. It was one of Quincy Jones' big stars. First big stars was Leslie Gore. He's responsible for the production on all that stuff. So Quincy Jones, the same guy who went on to produce the hugest hits of all time, which is to say he was Michael Jackson's producer. Pretty much got a lot of work by working with people like Leslie Gore and Ray Charles, of course, and a lot of other people. But you know, he was a very diverse record producer, that man, or arranger, I should say, Quincy Jones. All right. That being said, Leslie Gore, we played another track by this young lady at the time last week. And now what we're dealing with, of course, is as that song by Leslie Gore is rising up the charts, it actually stops at number two. And it can't get to number one. And the reason is the Beatles released I Want to Hold Your Hand. And that was the game changer. From this point forward, you're going to even notice that there's a shift in what the girl group songs are about until they eventually fade away. By the end of 1964 or 65, they become more and more scarce. Mm. The ones that are holding on, actually, are the ones that have got no direct competition with the Beatles at all, or the ones who are able to supply material that helps to feed the English invasion, which is exactly what Dionne Warwick was doing as she was performing all of the Bacharach David songs, including this rather strange rhythmic number, one of my favorite, again, another really
unusual dark song with a very unusual rhythm besides, but a cool song nonetheless by Dionne Warwick called Anyone Who Had a Heart.
Anyone who ever loved could look at me and know that I love you. Anyone who ever dreamed could look at me and know I dream of you.
Thank you.
there's the girl who actually came over on the wave that brought us the British invasion. Pretty much actually cut a lot of her teeth as well on a lot of the Dionne Warwick songs. Dusty Springfield was known for covering some of them, right, as were a number of artists. So we heard them back to back there, Dionne Warwick and then Dusty Springfield with They Only Want to Be With You. Well, I don't know how many more we've got time for. Not too many, I'm afraid. But there's one other artist. This is another artist who basically didn't really have too many big hits, but a fairly interesting history year. She had the original recording of a song called You're No Good, which later became a number one hit for Linda Ronstadt, right, as we said, the same sort of thing. And then eventually came out with this song, which became a fairly huge hit in her own right, which is good for her. Number six on the Billboard Hot 100 for Betty Everett. I think you know the song. It's title silly. It's called Shoop Shoop Song. You don't know that? Then you know the subtitle. It's called It's in His Kiss.
Ah.
Called the Shoop Shoop Song, believe it or not. Silly title, but a pretty great song for Betty Everett. She later went on to record a bunch of duets. A very popular one that she recorded with Jerry Butler was called Let It Be Me, their version of Let It Be Me, which was big. She also was the first person to record a song that Elvis Costello covered on the Taking Liberties album, I think it came out. The song Getting Mighty Crowded.
Mm.
That was originally Betty Everett who released that as well. How about that?
That's a good tidbit.
Yeah. Well, our show is up. Hope you enjoyed it very much. We will be back next week as we continue with our coverage of girl groups. Maybe our last show. Maybe we'll squeeze out two more. It's hard to say. I'll take a look at it. I'll try to see if I can get two more out of this format. Meanwhile, we'll leave you with another Motown artist, the queen of the ladies at Motown around this time, Mary Wells with My Guy. Take care, everybody. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Together, I'm telling you. away from my God.